Welcome back, guys, to the Beyond Condition podcast, the voice of bodybuilding. And today we have two voices that have both been on the podcast before. And you guys are so supportive of my mission and for us to come together and build a roundtable series of bringing other females on as well. But the three of us, so Sarah and Mana, have come on today. We're going to sort of lead the way and try and get some really cool guests to talk about essentially the things that don't get spoken about as much as they maybe could be in the female bodybuilding realm. So thank you for both of you coming on to start with. And then we decide where we go.
That's
Something
good.
that's just literally popped into my head that maybe male competitors don't have to worry quite so much about is pissing down your tan on show day.
We'll start right there. That's so true. Something that no one talks about, but the struggles of moving your suit to the side when you need to piss.
Fuck the shiwi off because that's just asking for problems. Hover, bit of toilet paper over the pan, and you get no splashback. Top
How
tip.
I do it. Yeah, it's a secret. This is the glam of
I remember
bodybuilding.
the first time it happened to me and I got a splash. I was literally like, as a first time, I'm thinking, oh my God, I've completely fucked it. Like, what am I going to do? And they were like, oh, we're just, touch it up. And I was like, fucking hell. Like, I'm literally anxieties thinking I've fucked my whole thing. I fucked it. I fucked
Of an overshare story, but it has
it.
relevance. When I was backstage at the O and I was a space cadet, did not know what the fuck I was doing and accidentally ate too much pineapple because I forgot Dan told me I could carb up on squares bars. So we've gone on for we've done the first comparisons in numerical order and we're waiting to go on for individual presentations. There was about three competitors in front of me, so it's like 3 minutes worth of time, and I felt my stomach go, and I was like, oh fuck. Literally had to run to the toilet in those 3 minutes, do the hover thing. And then, yeah, I was like paranoid that I was just gonna have splashed all the way up the back of my tan. So then I'm like running to the tan ladies, literally got back just as Emily Schubert walked off stage after hers, ready for mine. It was like, oh fuck. Oh God. Think that and nipple slips are like my fucking biggest fear. Absolutely.
So it is tricky, like I was actually having this conversation with one of my clients who's transitioning from figure to WPD, and she's got implants like myself. And the issue with suits, for figure and everything below, you kind of want that cleavage, you want your boobs, you want the twins nice and together. But for WPD, if you just have cleavage, that's your pec striations gone. Like you can't see it, so it's really hard. I've like working with my bikini sponsor, trying to get a suit that I'm not going to fall out of, but yet doesn't like push them up and in my face.
Our struggles.
I've done check-in shots before and not realized, posted it on my Instagram and then looked and been like, fuck my nipples out. But you can only just see like the difference in color. And I'm like, Matt, do I need to delete this? And he's like, I don't think anyone see it. I'm like, my nipple's actually out, but I'm like, I've posted it. What the fuck do I do?
Oh, that's
Wonder if
funny.
there
I
are
remember
any men out
seeing.
there that worry that they've got a ball hanging out mid-check-in. I wonder if that's it's a conversation I've never actually had with Dan, but I wonder if that's like a concern.
I remember seeing ages ago someone actually did had like posted their check-in and his ball bag was like fully out and he didn't realize. I was like, oh bro.
Hey, how about right? Actually, something I could ask you guys. It's a conversation Matt and I have, and I'm like, is it a thing when people Photoshop their check-in shots? Have you come across this? Because this is weird.
I think you said something about this the other day, didn't you, Sarah?
Yeah, it's a
I
wild.
haven't. I've never come across it, but then maybe I'm just completely naive to the fact that people do even Photoshop their check-in shot. I mean, if you
So
do, that's really sad.
I've been watching a lot of Goob.
Oh no. Yeah.
He caught Jessica Reyes Bideas. I can't say her name. He caught her doing it to her stage shots.
Oh, I think I've seen that one. Yeah.
And there was, I think it was, not Female Bodybuilding Channel, another one of those pages posted up a check-in photo of a female bodybuilder.
I
And
know
you
the one,
can
I think.
see the lockers are bent.
from her check-in where she stretched her quads out.
This is coming back to like everything we've been saying about like false perception. Like, why would you do that and think that that's okay? Because you're just creating that false perception of what's achievable. I mean, firstly, again, it comes back to like, you know, the PDs, and then you're editing your check-in pictures. How are people gonna follow that when you're lying about PDs and editing your check-in pictures? It just makes the whole thing so much worse.
There's the physical adapting and making themselves look bigger, and then there's the over filter, over saturation to make them look grainier and leaner than they actually are as well. It's just like back when I first started, I think I used to do that because I was just so like, oh my God, if I do this, you can see even more. It wasn't
Absolutely.
me trying to like dupe people, but that was back when we used to put filters on fucking everything.
Like the really like orange filter, you're like, this is
That
fucking
was
badass.
completely normal.
Fucking hell. Yeah, I love those
Lana,
moments.
I asked Sarah on the podcast we did together about if you could almost something you've learned that would change your bodybuilding career, as it were, and your journey. Is there anything you'd sort of take back to when you first started and go, okay, I need to use this bit of advice?
Think I was completely naive to how expensive bodybuilding would be, and yeah, how much even just a prep before even contemplating becoming enhanced, just protein powder, cream of rice, the amount of meat you eat, I was completely oblivious to. But I think probably the biggest thing would be practicing posing early. I didn't have any sort of formal posing input from anyone. I had a posing session with some weird, bizarre federation who I didn't even compete with in the end. And then I think the next sort of formal posing I had was a free PCA seminar, which isn't really the same because it's you're in a room full of X amount of people. And then after that, it wasn't until right before I turned pro that I had a face-to-face session with Babs. Like, it's just do it early. Do it
Yeah, I'd say that early.
to everyone. Say that to everyone, like posing, like, why would you waste 16 weeks of really, or 16, 20, however long weeks, and then get on stage and you can't pose when it's something that you really can control? So yeah, absolutely practice that posing early. Because it's you stand out on stage. But either way, you stand out on stage if you haven't practiced, and you stand out on stage if you have. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, absolutely, I'd say get that posing sorted early.
I definitely say it's underrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just in my head, I was like, well, I'm in condition. What, you know, that doesn't, that'll be fine.
It's a great lesson.
Naivety. Naivety. I stood in the
Also,
middle of the stage like a friggin' scarecrow.
I
Looked
love
like
that
something
picture of
out of the
you,
Hills Have Eyes.
though. That's the best picture ever. I love it. Two
It's
legs
one of those
together.
things, though, isn't it? It's like with the posing, I think that, you know, in my personal experience, when I speak to people that reach out through the podcast or on social media or whatever it may be, a lot of, you know, the first timers or people that are still quite new to it, there is certainly this illusion that, you know, well, it's just a diet and, you know, I'll do some a bit of posing. But then you do get to that point where I remember, Mana, I was talking to Dan about this with your posing, and it's like, this is really important, but we have to fit this in with Romana's schedule. And it's like a really difficult thing. And I know, Sarah, you do your posing as well. And it's like, you have to find a way, if you can, to fit it in your lifestyle. But I think that a lot of people that come into it wouldn't even maybe look at that. Oh, okay, can I fit it in? They're like, well, you know, I'll do my best to fit it in, where it's like, you really need to put intention into that weekly practice if you can, and time allows. And if need be, maybe switch some of the stuff. So I know you can sort of almost use it as an expenditure tool if you're posing quite hard. So maybe you switch out some cardio or something like this, you know.
Definitely. And I'd say, like, even if it's like, you know, 4 or 5 rounds after training, like, as long as you're doing it and you're, you know, doing it hard, then it doesn't matter. Like, during my prep, I'll always put a pose in the morning after training, and then in the evening. And then when I'm with Lisa, I'll do an hour of every session that we do. And I think
It's people need to remember that it's not only your presentation, but it's also conditioning. So being able to control your breath correctly during those poses so your belly isn't distended or anything like that. So it's like it is a form of conditioning that you need to be able to do because, like I say to everyone, they might not have you on stage posing for like say 10 seconds, but if you can hold that pose for 10 seconds and it's the difference between first and second and you get called out in that top two and they're looking at, okay, these two are really good, but what one can I push the furthest? So it might be the difference between first and second. So always pose, like I say this to everyone, always pose for say 15 to, or build it up, like taper up from like 10 to 15, 20 seconds hold because you know that you're prepared for basically anything.
Same, I do that. I know sometimes it's like almost that when I first started doing it myself as a competitor and doing the longer holds, I'm always like, this is really awkward. I'm just like standing here for 30 seconds in one pose. But also, like, you know, we have to be contortionists to a certain degree, particularly bikini like this, and it's not the
The
normal
back, fuck
position.
me.
Yeah, like I get off
You've
stage
got an
once.
extra joint in there. It's like you've got a hinge joint where
Yeah.
your thoracic joins your lumbar.
It's
I
savage.
tried
To do it the other day, but my belly was just like, man, I was like, I don't know how to control this.
It's I've had quite a lot of debates about this, but I personally like to do some posing in between sets. So I'll get
We
off a
spoke about this,
machine
bro, ages ago.
and I will do especially the poses that I find hardest to hold. So I'll hit my quarters because of my back. I do struggle the most with those whilst I'm still gassed from doing the exercise I've just done. And some people, their argument against it's like, well, you should be focused on your session. Well, how is posing not focusing on your bodybuilding? I mean, maybe it's different because I did it in a public gym as well, but now I'm in a private gym, it's even easier to, there's less eyes on you and that sort of thing. But it's still like, how are you going to build that endurance up by doing posing when you're tired, when
And
you're gassed,
also,
when you're out of breath? You look at
it's true.
Hardy and Samson, the amount of rounds they did. I know that's the Arnold, but still, it happens.
It's got to be working for you, you know, and sometimes you get the inclination, don't you? And it's like, if this is what I talk to clients about, it's like, we've set this plan right, and then one part of the plan, it's really difficult to follow. And every week, there's that same thing, and it's like, I'm not nailing X. And then it keeps happening. So we're trying different things. And then you hit the gold, as it were, and it's like, oh, that's normal, like the rest of the stuff I need to do. It's in my plan. I'm doing it every day. And similar to, you know, what you're saying there about posing, it's like what works for you. And we'll talk about this as well, but the external pressure of people saying, well, you shouldn't really do it like that, or you should do it like this, or you should. It's like, fuck that. You know, you've got to do what suits you if you're then able to do the posing. And if psychologically that feels good as well, right? This is important.
I think it's important that like the more you pose, the more you find how you pose for you. Like me and Ro won't pose exactly the same because we're two very different people. So instead of like just following the crowd, obviously, yes, start with the basic kind of poses, but make that pose your own. Like I say to people, like pose as much as you can because then I'm very much a different character on stage because that's how I like to display my physique. So find what works for you, find that flow, and then you'll find that you get on stage one, more confident, and two, actually telling a story instead of just being the same as everyone else on stage. I think that's really important, is finding what works for you because then it stands out. You're not like another person that's posing the same as everyone else.
Yeah, for sure. It also, I think that, you know, even with you guys, where you have to look at music and this type of thing, like you're saying there, bringing your own story into it, I've certainly always felt like, wow, that would be so cool to like create that, and that to be, you know, your masterpiece, as it were, and like a celebration of the prep and practicing that, etc., etc. And it's useful to sort of say as well, like I say, I really look up to what you guys do, and it's something I'm like, wow, if I could like have physiques like you, it's very aspirational for me. But again, you know, before we jumped on, we spoke about difference in, you know, what criteria and what category people go for. My frame is very much suited to the bikini realms. And, you know, yes, I could try and put on more muscle and pursue that, but I had to take a judgment call as to, you know, how old I am, what I want to do for the rest of my journey as a competitor. And it's like, you know, I've done well in bikini and it's suiting to that. Whereas I think some people come into the sport and it's like, I'm going to jump straight into women's physique or whatever as a goal. And it's like, hold on a minute, we need to look at your genetics, your frame, everything there. And I'm sure you'll agree there, girls. It's a super important thing. You can't always necessarily start with what you maybe want to aspire to, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what you did, Ro, wasn't it? You started in figure and then worked your way up.
Yeah, it's at the time I came from the CrossFit background,
Oh, yeah.
so I had an upper body. It was my legs that were lacking, but at the same time, it was like my upper body and my mere bone structure. I wouldn't have even been able to have done trained bikini because my clavicles are just they're too wide.
Hench.
So it's sorry.
Hench. She's born hench.
It is a different bone structure, isn't it? You know, you think of your figure competitors upwards generally tend to have broader shoulders. You can't, it's trying to like downsize that square peg and fit it in a very small round hole. It's not going to work. It's like just because you want to do bikini, you might not have the bone structure to do bikini. But likewise, like you were saying, you might want to do women's physique, but you haven't had the time simply on the planet training to be able to get there yet. So if you want to compete, there's a kind of working progress to try and get there.
I reckon you would probably have many conversations with competitors, Sarah, about that as well.
All the time. It's like just take steps. Like I started in trained figure and I worked my way up. Like I think you do see an anomaly of some people going from bikini to women's physiques. I've seen that before, but it's like, what? Just take those steps because one, it's probably safer, and like you don't want to move into such a drastic, like don't go into such drastic change because the risks are going to be way too high. So always just kind of go through the categories, see where you fit, and you never know. Along that journey, you might just find actually I like trained figure or I like athletic figure, so I'm just going to stay here. Because then I think as you go through your journey, you realize actually how much it takes to get to the bigger categories. And how much time it takes to get to those bigger categories. And I mean, we could argue that, well, we don't even need to argue. There's more risk the higher you go in regards to muscle mass and holding that mass as a female. Yeah, I have to have this conversation with a lot of people. And the fact that, I recently had a conversation with one of my ladies where it's like, let's talk about whether this risk is even worth it because you've got a family, and there are things that realistically, what does the future hold for your bodybuilding career? And in the end, we decided, you know what, let's actually downsize and let's just get back because she loves competing, and she's been with me for a while and we can have these conversations as coach and athlete because we're very close and she still wants to get on stage. So we're gonna be like, right, let's just draw the line a little bit further back and then just go and do what we love and not have the pressure of constantly having to put on muscle mass and risking our lives when you've got a family to care for. And I think a lot of people don't want to have that conversation because they're all like, oh, now I just want to win. And it's important to want to win, but then you've got to also think, and this is something we spoke about, Sarah, in our podcast, is like the environment in which you're in and the people that you've got around you. Like realistically, is it worth that risk because you've got a family and kids? Like, yes, we love what we do and it's important to love bodybuilding, but then you've also got to realize like, okay, so what are you willing to put on the table? Because there's so much more that you don't realize that you have to put on the table that's going to increase that risk. And like I said, I think a lot of people don't want to have that conversation when really it's one that needs to be had. And that I think comes down to that relationship you have with a coach and an athlete is having that good, strong communication to be able to be like, actually, let's just sit back and think, what is this worth? You know what I mean? So that's, I do have that conversation quite a lot, but I'm very lucky to work with the people that I do because we have that solid relationship to have that open conversation.
I love that.
The risk side of things is so important. It's like I think back, you asked me earlier, what have I learned? Well, I've learned that a lot of coaches don't talk about the risk of using PEDs or even using auxiliaries, things like clenbuterol. I've spoken about that before. They don't talk about what that can do to your body internally, physiologically, what that drug actually does to your body when you take it. And what effects that can have long term is just so not spoken about. And like going back to what you said, Sarah, about the few anomalies that have gone straight from bikini to WPD, I'm money on, as a rule, that time period they've taken to do that is more than one season. And maybe those that have taken a shorter time have pushed the anabolics that they've used to get there. But the issue with that is, when you look at your top WPD pros and your top women's bodybuilding pros, yeah, they've got size, but the muscle, the density to the muscle, the maturity to the muscle, it's a different look. So you may be able to put on a substantial amount of size in the space of one season because you don't give a fuck about the risks and you're happy to accept the risks and you want to push the drug load, but the look is going to be different. It takes time. You can't rush it. It's like you can't just go, oh, I'm gonna whack a fuck ton of gear in me and train like a loon for a year. And I'm yeah, well done. You've got the size, but the muscle looks and sits differently on the body.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You said this, Sarah, in our pod. You were like, you know, when you step on stage, and we used it for one of the reels, it's like you're like, holy fuck, because it's like suddenly, and what you described there, man, and that's what Sarah was describing. It's like the maturity and the density is very different look when you go into the pro league. Now, a lot of people have this shock. They get a pro card and it's fucking sick, you know. Hats off to everyone pursuing this sport and whatever you do, whatever route. But it's like then when you do go to pro level, it's a very, very big difference in my experience, and for both of you, it sounds like.
I think when I messaged you, Ro, when you had finished the year and you said how crazy it was to be backstage with ladies that have been, you know, a little bit longer in the sport compared to us per se.
Definitely. It's like I had the same thoughts in some ways when I debuted in figure, and my physique was very, very different to what it is now. And it's like stepping on that stage in Poland, I was like, I came 10th, and I was like, I'd be ecstatic if I broke the top 10, because the women that I was competing against were just next level. It's and it with figure as well, it's this weird kind of. They're still very, very lean, but they're not so striated, and the balance with that, with the peak, it's just, yeah, it's a different ball game.
Yeah. I
Sure.
think even like being at Texas when I stood next to Alicia, and she's like not even that older than I think, obviously I'm 27. I think Alicia's like 32, 33. And even the difference in that, because she's not considered old in women's physique per se, but like even standing next to Alicia, who's had a few more years of training than I have, the difference in the density in her physique to mine is ridiculous.
And it goes back to as well, you know, potentially what have these athletes done even as a child, you know, like a lot of professional swimmers or people that have pursued something like swimming or gymnastics, you know, it not necessarily heavily muscled as it were, but that foundation there of, you know, and a lot of these children that are into sport at a young age, their nutrition is probably going to be better than mine was. Well, probably I say, definitely, because, you know, I came from nothing. No, I didn't know fuck all until bodybuilding. I did a bit of triathlon. So this is something that people do need to consider as well. You know, there certainly is that whole background of someone from a, you know, year dot, what they've done there as well, that would potentially contribute to how much muscle mass, you know, they've got.
It's that, I think it's that nature versus nurture, isn't it? Like, are you nurtured into that environment, and or is it the nature that you're in that gut environment because of your people around you? I think, and we think about, you know, if you take Natalia, who was previous Miss Olympia, she's the same age as me, and she's already won a Miss Olympia. Do you know what I mean? So, what is she getting given in America that we don't have over here? And you probably can vouch for this, Ro, where in the States it's so different because. You're like you're someone that they want to help, whereas over here you don't really get that so much. And you know, probably with the American show that you did, Ro, like, and even in Canada, I mean, I can't speak for you, but it's probably a little bit different, right?
We were talking about this last night, actually, how in the UK, if you know, Dan and I wander around Sainsbury's together and we get funny looks and comments and things like that. Wandering around a supermarket in Canada, we're getting compliments. It's like it's different. The interaction is different. But it's funny how you brought up Natalia, because I was just thinking about her, that people might be lulled into that false sense of security going, well, she's been Miss Olympia and she's only 27. But if you listen to her talk about what she's done in the past, linking back to what you were saying, Sarah, about, you know, people coming from gymnastic background, I think she said something about when she was 15, she decided she wanted to be a bodybuilder. So she's still got like 12 years of bodybuilding training under her belt. It's not like she's come into the sport at 22 and become Miss Olympia from that. It's still that longevity within training. But yeah, the attitudes stateside towards people like being a female walking around with more muscle mass is very, very different to, like, I don't know, I didn't feel as, for want of a better word, as much of a weird freak. It was accepted more.
People just like want to help. Like when I did legions, And I was still very much like a baby. I'm still a very much a baby in the sport anyway. But like, they were like, "Oh, can I get you this? Do you need this? Like, here's the gym to train at. Like, let's link up." And like, she gave me their number and everything. And we've now made connections that will last me a lifetime. And because they want help instead of being like, "Oh, she's a muscular woman, must take steroids."
Yeah.
That comment we got, that guy, steroids. Yeah, where's our
That's
mate? Like, what do you want
yeah.
here?
Good job. Yeah.
Is that like you're almost thought of as lower in society as somebody with some sort of drug or alcohol addiction? Oh,
Yeah.
dirty bodybuilder. Oh, it's what?
I
Yeah.
know.
We're
What's
invested to clock
happening?
at night. We eat like clean food. We keep ourselves to ourselves. You know, 99% of us are introverts, and the 1% that aren't are probably faking the fact that they're deep down an introvert that just wants to sit in a quiet room. It's like the majority, you know, have some sort of income contributing to society. We're not out on the rob to fund our fucking bodybuilding. How are we lower down in the pecking order in society to someone that's smashing car windows to be able to flog a radio or some fucking piece of whatever is in the car to fund their fix? Like, it's why are we treated in the same category?
It's a wild concept for me. I had Janae Croc, so was Matt Croc transitioned. She's a famous powerlifter and made that transition from being male to female essentially. And I mean, you can imagine the abuse that she had, but what she was describing on the podcast was very, very cool because it was like when I was Matt Croc at the Olympia, famous powerlifter, everyone, I couldn't even go for a wee without a photo and everything there. Then she would be at work as Janae, and you know, people would be a bit like, "Oh, I don't really know how to speak to this person because she's very, very heavily muscled, sick physique, by the way." And then she'd be, you know, transitioning as a transgender, so out in public with, you know, female clothes, with heavily muscled and a wig and everything. And she said she'd be like literally scum of the earth in the abuse that she faced. And I know it's a different example, but it's just that like snapshot of you could be on stage as a heavily muscled person and everyone's like, wow. And then, like you say, you're in Tesco and people are like, ugh. And you're like, you know, it's really fucking bizarre.
I was thinking about this the other day because there's a guy I follow who grew up in the same little town in Dorset that I grew up in, and he's called Jamie Wanderlust. Is it Wanderlust or Wanderhurst or something like that on Instagram? And he's, you know, non-binary, wears makeup, puts a lot up on his, I should say, their story, to be honest, their story about the comments that they get when they're on public transport and how hateful it can be. And I was actually like, although it is different to being trans to transitioning or being non-binary, it still elicits the same, a very similar sort of response and a very similar amount of hate as a man on a train wearing makeup. It's we are expressing who we feel we are deep down inside, and we're getting criticism and prejudice because of it. Why is that allowed?
Sorry, again, we spoke about this on the podcast, didn't we? And a lot of people resonated with that because people are like, yeah, I've fucking experienced this. Whether it's like social media, people have had coaches that have said, like, and I've had this multiple times, you'd be just that fat person if it wasn't for me. I got you your pro card. And it's all this type of like shit that we go through. And, you know, even the people that are listening that are not in the heavily muscled divisions, it's like you still get this like stigma. And like you said, Manu, it's like, we're trying to just do something good here, guys. Like, why the fuck are you giving me shit?
Back before I was carrying this much muscle, I'd go into work with whatever it was I'm eating, and I'd have people like try and put their fingers in my food, going, "Oh, can I touch that?" Or if you're sat there eating a burger, how would you feel if I came up and asked to touch it? Can I touch your eyeball? Is that all right? Can I do that? No. What, you don't want me to do that? Well, funnily enough, I don't want your grubby little pinkies in my food that I'm about to
I
put in my
can't
mouth,
believe
thanks.
someone asked to do
On
that.
multiple occasions, not just the same person, multiple occasions. Like,
So
oh,
weird.
what? Ugh, what's that? Ugh, poke, like trying to poke it.
It's chicken and rice, Karen. Fuck off.
No, it's fucking Karen's around. Fuck off, Karen.
Was actually called Karen, to be fair.
Do it.
Sorry, have you ever worked in sort of an environment like an office type environment or anything like that while being a bodybuilder?
Yeah, so I used to work for a company called Towergate, who basically sold like static caravan insurance and stuff like that. Yeah, big timer, mate. Loved it. No, I actually like it completely crumbled me beyond belief, and I had to leave because my mental health got so bad. Because being an in like, I don't think people understand that being in insurance, the amount of fucking hate you get on the phones. Oh my God, like it was just horrendous. And you obviously being on the phones as well, Ray, when you're in your ambulance career and stuff like that. That's probably, you know, you. I remember you saying to me you used to get quite a lot of hate on stuff on the phones and things. And like, after a while, I was just like, I can't do this. But when what I found working in an office environment is I was a complete outcast because I didn't drink, I didn't do coke, I didn't go out on weekends because I didn't want to. And I found that when I would have to go and have a meal, I would, you know, I'd get to work an hour early, walk to work and sit on a wall eating my meal, and then get to work and then hide away and sort of eat my food in the toilets, or go for my lunch and go and sit in a park somewhere because I felt embarrassed. Because, well, not embarrassed, but I didn't want to have all the fucking, why are you eating that? What are you doing that for? Blah, blah, blah. Because I didn't want to. And because I wasn't someone that went out and got pissed up and coked up every weekend, I was the outcast. And I wasn't hated, but it just made the work life really hard because I wasn't the same as everyone else. And mix that with getting abuse on the phones 24/7, it's kind of like I'm trying to just follow what I want to follow. And out of everyone here, I'm probably more aware of my health than anyone else. And it's just so weird. It comes back to that stigma of like, you know, it's okay to drink and do fucking coke on the weekends, but we can't go to the gym and take a few PEDs here. It's mad, really. But yeah, I think, you know, working in an office, so I've done obviously office jobs, and then the majority of my life I've worked in warehouse because I like the active job and I like being, if you give me a list, I'll work for it. And that was very much a warehouse job. But when I even worked in the warehouses, I would have my lunches early. I would just I'd hide away when I ate because I couldn't be, when people are like, oh, you know, I'm going to start losing weight and stuff, and you're like, just start then. Like, it's
Yeah,
just
just
because you
start
know I
anytime.
do that. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. And it was constant. And, you know, I'm very blessed to be able to be self-employed full time now and be able to just eat when I want to eat. But like, I think, you know, people just have just a weird perception of bodybuilding and fitness and stuff, you know. So yeah.
A lot of it comes from, in my experience, the people that have had those kind of issues with what I'm eating, what I'm doing, the fitness level I'm at, and those kind of snidey little comments. Or like I've had a manager have a conversation with me about how my eating is perceived, because like I think I shoveled a few spoonfuls of chicken and rice into my mouth before a Zoom meeting started, and it was like, you know, you should be really cautious about how your eating's perceived. Well, to start off with, I think you're actually projecting the fact that perhaps you're not comfortable with the dietary choices that you make. And I think a lot of it comes from like people saying, oh, I don't want to look like you, I don't want to get muscly like you. It's, you know, I don't want to eat that, or why are you eating that? Why are you doing that? You look like masculine and all that sort of thing. Deep down, I think it comes from their own sort of lack of acceptance that they look the way they look, but they don't want to do what they need to do to change how they look. So it's easier to make somebody else feel bad, makes them feel a little bit better in themselves for that 30 seconds, and then they go on to feeling like shit again. It's, you know, if you don't have the dedication to do what I do, that's fine, but don't make me feel shit because I do have the dedication to do what I do.
Yeah.
Such a relevant point. And Janae actually said this, the people that, like, she gets death threats, and it went to the point where she was getting so much hate from certain people over like a year or whatever. And she said a lot of the time, if she did ever message them back, a lot of the time she didn't, but if she messaged them back, they were actually like closet trans, or they had a fascination with muscular women, and that's why they were like projecting on her and giving her death threats and things. And I was like, whoa, you know, I never sort of thought of it like that. And I wonder if it's similar to, you know, the comments we get on our posts are and things like that. It's like, you know, why on earth would you need to put, yeah, you look like a man, or you get these comments, and it's like, what are you getting from that? I don't understand, unless there's something going on their end, or maybe that thought process, they really like it, but they don't want to like it because maybe it's not meant to be, you know?
Yeah, it's just so backwards, isn't it? It's so, like, my theory as well is if there's someone that really doesn't like you, they then just hide behind a random account that has like two followers. So I wonder whether there's more people that we know making these comments than actually that we think they're just strangers. That's the theory that I have to some things.
People we went to school with that fucking
Yeah, like I'm gonna hide behind Bunny XX on Instagram.
How do you girls find it with, like we spoke about before we jumped on, Manu, about the bodybuilding, the accounts that sort of follow muscular women and they repost for you and things like that. Have you ever found that that's like weird, or you find it's a compliment? How did you find it when it first started happening? Like, can we repost your muscular physique, please?
Some accounts that I'm like, yeah, go for it, more than happy, like, not a problem. Generally, I'll say it's not a problem, but there are a couple out there where the accounts are kind of, they've reposted and then there's a lot of comments back and forth and they start to get a little bit odd. And you can tell that they're just trying to get the interaction. And I end up just double tapping, giving it a little heart, and then not replying to it because yeah, it kind of gets to a bit of a weird one. But there's the account we were chatting about at the start of this podcast. I think it's Irish Muscle Lover, and
Yeah, I
he's
think
that sounds like he'd
so.
be a creep of an account. But I've had a little bit of back and forth with this guy, and if you want a giggle at somebody who's really quick-witted and fast-tongued with what to say to trolls, have a scroll through his account. It is fucking brilliant. Like, literally, I was talking about a Valentine's Day post I put up that got like nearly 13,000 likes and a fuck ton of really, like, some of the comments were quite comical and some of them were just downright fucking, oh, it was one of me and Dan. He was at the uni. I was a week out from Toronto. So we're both like lean as fuck.
Sick
And
photo.
it's like, yeah, it just looks like two men, two dudes hugging, all this sort of stuff. And this Irish muscle lover has just gone through the comments and rinsed them. It's fucking brilliant.
It's a wild, wild thing. Do you get people approach you for this as well?
Yeah, quite a few. Probably the same as Ro, actually. That muscle Irish guy's been like, we have to talk all the time. There's someone called FTC Show. He's lovely as well. They're just people that like want to support, but like Ro said, some of them do get a little bit weird. Like I had a page the other day, Adobe shop my picture,
I
and
love that one.
it was
Was that
fucking
muscle
brilliant.
bodybuilding edits?
Yeah, and I
Yeah,
was just
doing
like, this is
bodybuilding
what I live
edits.
for. It's fucking brilliant. Like, and some people genuinely thought that was what I looked like, and I was like, oh my God, like
Like, this is insane.
and shit like that is so funny. But like you obviously get a few creepy ones, but yeah.
We were talking about so because I think that the whole point of that bodybuilding edits and women's bodybuilding edits is
Yeah.
that it's a whole page dedicated to editing and making the
Yeah.
women look like they have more muscle. So it's kind of in context. I had one when I was on prep for the O who took some of my photos, which was fine, but then filtered them
Oh.
and made them look like I was more lean. And it was Dan went mental because he
Headshot.
was like, now it looks like you've edited the photo, and I
Yeah,
hadn't.
that's a
It was
problem there.
they'd filtered it when they reposted it. And I was a little bit like, that fucked me off because
Yeah.
it could have been perceived that I'd edited
Yeah, and that's what you don't want, for sure.
it.
Yeah.
Everyone like, that one was so good though. So
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. I was like, if I look like this, bam. Everyone's like, yeah, you're definitely gonna look like that on stage next year. And I'm like, probably not. But I thought it was very funny. It came up on my For You page and I was like, what in the fuck is this? Like just floating around the internet. And then I was like, oh, nice. But I
That's
thought
me. So
it was funny.
with the sort of Instagram trolls and what we face now, we spoke about it quite a lot, Sarah, on our podcast about blocking, deleting, etc. Now, if there's anyone watching that sort of or listening that's got to the point where it is overtaking them, and even sort of the blocking and deleting comments is still causing them to feel in a really difficult spot, is there anything else other than sort of reaching out to your support network that you any either of you could think of that could sort of help people? Because I feel like there could be people that are in quite a bad spot with it if they're being targeted.
I think
Really.
like It's hard when you run a business on like Instagram or social media or something like that. But like in the grand scheme of things, what's it worth? Like if you're really getting that upset by getting trolls or someone that's being very persistent in their rude comments or something versus just stepping away from social media for a week or so and then creating a new one and just having like people be like, okay, this like try and just promote this page instead of the old one. Yeah, arguably you might see that that person may come and find you, but take a step back from social media. Like recently I had a guy who was trolling my Typeform, trolling my Calendly, filling up my consults. He was emailing me, he was Instagramming me, and in the end I had to remove my Typeform from my Instagram, which obviously is going to affect my business. Block him on all emails. He managed to get through back into my emails as well, and he started just sending me like hate mail and stuff because I wouldn't video call with him because he just wanted to talk about my muscles. So it's kind of like just completely eliminate yourself from that situation, block them on all things, and even if you need to take a couple weeks away from social media, then it's more worth it doing that than being like, oh, but my business. But if you're in a good position business wise and you're able to do that, then great. If not, I would just delete that account and then just start a new one and see if you can develop your business that way. Because people who are going to follow you and have followed you for a while are going to come over to that new page. I think that's the best thing to do, in my opinion, is just step back from social media for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Always the setting your profile to private.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I really struggle with this because that particular Valentine's Day post, normally it doesn't get to me, but the amount of comments on that, it did start to get to me, and it went on for about 3 weeks, these comments. I don't know, it must have been shared somewhere and it just caught the eye of all these trolls. I personally feel very strongly about not having to edit yourself and what you put out there, but then that has to be weighed up with the mental effect, like you were saying, Sarah, of what those comments and constant persistent interactions are doing to you. I personally would probably set my profile to private as a first option so that I could still post what I wanted to post without those people being able to access it. But yeah, it is a difficult one what to do when it does get the noise gets too loud. And I think, yeah, ultimately, as much as maybe you don't want to have to kind of withdraw yourself and edit yourself, it might have to be like that just for a short while to allow that heat to kind of dissipate. It's not an easy answer.
I think as well, like when you get, say, 3 weeks out from a show, that noise can become very loud. And I just delete my social media and my other half does it. Because I don't want that noise. I don't want that persistent issue or persistent noise in the background. So I just delete it. And then especially even close to show, I won't even look at my phone. Like I'll say to my clients, like, if you need me, message me on WhatsApp, but I won't be on Instagram. So don't worry about tagging me on anything. Because realistically, I'm not going to be on there. My other half will oversee things, but that's all how it will be. And it's just so much better that way. You don't need to be on social media right up until the show. I think a lot of amateurs put so much pressure on themselves, even pros as well, to consistently put out on social media on the run up to shows. Just chill out, like, do your thing. And if you need to be on social media, then fine. If it doesn't aggravate you that much, but if it starts to really like bug you down, just come off it. Like, what difference is it going to make? This is your journey. Focus on what you need to do, not what others think you're going to be doing. That's really important.
Wouldn't dare give Dan my Instagram.
Oh, yeah. He would go mad, wouldn't he?
Would. The replies the trolls would get would be
Oh,
interesting, I
yeah.
think,
Oh,
to start off with. And
yeah.
I think my story would just be full of him talking about he'd use it as an avenue for him to rant
Him and the
without it
dog.
being linked to his
Oh,
profile.
yeah. Him and the
That'll be
dog
good.
there, like, right, okay.
But that reducing the amount of interaction you have with Instagram when you're on prep, I definitely think is a good idea. I looked back last year between Toronto and I think it was like the end of February. So from the end of February to the beginning of June, I posted 12 times, which I think, is about once a week, if that.
We certainly get into these rabbit holes of wanting to post as well, and I've definitely found over my time, like, when you're in prep, your attraction goes up on like a check-in shot or whatever. I think, Sarah, you've done really well with regards to how much traction you get in off season. I think you've almost become this like standout person that people are like, whoa, this is fucking sick. Great traction on that. I feel like for myself, a lot of it, I've had to build up a bit of momentum with posting about my off season, etc. But certainly in prep, there is a large disparity between people like, yeah, you're shredded and whatever, and they see all the new striations and things like this. And then I think that personally, you know, you can sometimes get to that point where you're like, I'm posting for the sake of posting because I need that dopamine hit of everyone going, yeah, you look sick and whatever. But then you can get into these rabbit holes of like seeing who's you're competing against or whatever. Really, we spoke about it earlier, you know, their posing may not be on point. Their peak might go wrong. You know, they might not even turn up. Something might go on. And also, you can't be someone else. So it's like, you know, comparing to someone else. Yes, you can use it as a bit of a, you know, almost inspiration or something there to sort of get you ready. But it's a fine line between becoming quite almost jealous and led by someone else, losing sight of actually, you know, I'm going to do this for me and I'm going to step on stage looking my best, not just to beat one person that you're on stage. And I think it can get quite mentally hard if you do that.
Definitely something that's I've suffered with. And the thing that I'm learning more is that a one-off, no context check-in photo on Instagram of your competitor isn't necessarily going to give you the full visual representation of what that person looks like. I remember for Toronto stressing about Amandine Colley and just being like, fucking hell, she's huge. I saw her in the gym. Because that's the other thing at pro shows, you know, you're all traveling to that location for that show and you're all needing to train and you're all trying to avoid the after work rush. So you're all in there during the day. And then before you know it, you're in a gym filled with the people that you're going to step on stage with in the next couple of days. They've all got a pump and your brain's just fucking spiraling, going, I had a complete meltdown in Spain. Because, yeah, exactly that situation's happened. And I've just said to that, I was like, fucking hell, I don't even know what the point is. You know, I'm not going to, these women are insane. Because you don't see yourself. I was just like, I'm, you know, we'll be coming home last. You know, look at them. They're just, and then the result happened. It's so difficult to let go of that kind of, for me, it's always that not feeling good enough, not feeling as if I've got what I need to hold my own in those sort of ranks. And it doesn't matter what anyone says to me, I still think it. So yeah, I generally, instead of blocking or unfollowing, I'll just mute that person whilst I'm on prep. And then because it's not popping up, it doesn't play on my mind.
That's what, like, a lot of people are like, are you moving up to women's bodybuilding? And I'm like, no, because if I stand next to people like Ivy or Sarah, then they'll still dwarf me. Do you know what I mean? It's like you said, it's that one check-in. Someone may look fucking huge, but then when you stand against 10, 20, 25 other women who dwarf the fuck out of you, then it's just think about the bigger picture instead of just that one check-in picture.
For sure. And also, you know, peaking in itself, I mentioned it there about how someone's peak goes. Like, well, you know, from Dan Marner, like what happened to that last peak, you know, peaks can go really, really bad. They can go really, really good, and you can look better than you maybe thought you were going to. There's literally everything in between that can go on in a peak. And I still feel so fascinated by peaking because it's like every single one I've done is slightly different. I've done 7 seasons, so many different peaks, but it's always something slightly different. And what happens to the physique? It's like, wow. So if you can try and, you know, use these tactics, if social media is bringing you down, also your peak and your physique will look better if you're less stressed. And that's something, again, that can be overlooked because it's like, you know, you're stressing yourself out essentially physiologically by doing the prep. So it's like, well, what's a bit more stress? But little things like that, if that chips away at you, your battery inside, as it were, your CNS, that can make a big, big difference if you're thinking, I'm never going to look like X person, because you're not, are you? You know, you're not that person. So.
Like, even in like Alicante, I think I spent literally the 3 days running up to show sleeping, and that was the best look that I ever had. Like, I remember, like literally just putting my legs up and sleeping, and it made such a difference to how my legs looked because I had them up and I was rested instead of worrying about steps. Because I obviously had everyone with me in Alicante, like Tom and the team and stuff, and just having him there, being able to just rest, recover, sleep, made such a difference. The overall looks, I wasn't stressing as much.
The ability to sleep on peak week.
Mate, once those carbs go in, I'm dead to the world.
The Olympia peak week, it didn't matter what Dan gave me. I still couldn't. I remember we were, our toilet broke about 4 days out. I timed it. It was flushing by itself every 8 seconds. And we're in a little studio apartment in Florida. And I just started to feel sleepy, and the engineers turned up to fix it. So I've got my earpods in and I'm listening to some music. And Dan's just like trying to get these plumbers that only spoke Spanish to be quiet because I've actually managed to go to sleep. Time to remove the whole toilet. We had to go out because can you imagine? You're on, it's peak week, you're water loading, and your fucking toilet's broken.
Fuck
Can't
that.
remember where we went, if I'm honest, but we had to, yeah, we had to just, I think we went to the gym and I just ended up doing some posing because it was like we're near a toilet and there's aircon.
It's all those to the like the toilet stories and stuff like that, like all the different peaks, you know, when you are traveling as well, particularly if I've traveled in the UK and it's maybe like a 4 or 5 hour journey in the car, like maybe two
Noise.
miles. Yeah. And then you're like, I remember I went to one show with Tom and we were in the car, and I think it was like maybe 3 hours or something. And we got in the car and he said to Matt, he was like, Sarah's the priority. She's the athlete. She needs to go to the toilet. We'll be pulling over and she'll be going to the toilet. Right. How are you doing there? How are you doing? Do you need the toilet? Yeah. Okay. Right. Keep going. Legs up. It was like this. We kept just pulling over, and it was like you've just got to piss on the side of the road or whatever. But I'm like, well, I think peaking is super, super cool. Like I said to you, like the fascination, but I think it adds to that, like, I want to be weird and I want to be a different person to like normal people. I like that I'm a weird bodybuilder. I'm like, I don't want to be fucking normal. And it's stuff like that that's super cool. Like right at the start when we say about tanning, like all these things that come from bodybuilding that are so far-fetched, it's like normal people don't experience anything like that. And I think that that needs to be a driver for people to a certain degree as well. It's like you're part of like this clique that, yes, we get abuse and all the other stuff, but it's like, but actually we're like doing something really cool. And you can lose sight of that if you get pulled down by the noise you described it as, sorry, you know?
Part of, because I can't, somebody asked me how I found like competing with other competitors in bodybuilding versus other sports. And my answer will always be bodybuilding competitors are the most friendly type of competitors versus the other sports that I've done. I swear part of that is the fact that the first time you really meet the people you're going to stand on stage with, you're in a tent completely butt naked. Just like,
It's so
there
weird.
is no, you, there's no way of having an ego when you've got absolutely no clothes on, being effectively having brown air sprayed at you. You're fucking depleted. You're fucking cold. It's like, how else the camaraderie is best right there.
I remember being cat in Kante, and there was like 23 of us just around one fan. And it's like, what's the fuck it like? I literally have like there are boobs everywhere. I don't want to make eye contact. Like it's so weird. You're like, yeah.
The first time it's like
In between prejudging and finals at Empro, I had to get my tan touched up because it was so hot. I looked like a homeless person that hadn't washed for about 3 months. That kind of where it goes all patchy in your joints and that in the creases kind of thing. And they didn't segregate the tanning area. And these two lads are literally trying to stand there to cop an eyeful. Dan's like bubbling because he's up there as well. Just, oh,
I think abroad there can be a
nothing.
bit different, actually. I just remember when I competed at the university in Mexico, when they tanned me, I had to, it was two men, and which I'm like, I don't fucking care, I need my tan. So I turn around to do the bit where you have to sort of bend forward and almost like bend the knees a little bit, and so they can do the back climb. And then there was another, the second guy had his phone and he was like that. And I'm like, is he videoing me? I really don't know, but I need to get the tan. And they don't speak any English. So when you're competing internationally, they're that like, you're like, do they do that like this? I don't really know what to do here, but there's someone with a camera pointing at my ass and I don't know what to do.
That's a bit weird.
It was really weird.
Just like that. They tan both the men's pros and the women's pros at the same time. And it was like both
Normal.
sexes doing the tanning, but there was no cameras involved in that.
I was
Yeah.
like,
Are you sure you were at the tanning booth? Like,
was, well, if it, the thing is, as well, it was in this like changing room, but it was like round a corner, and the changing room was really big, so it was like different areas in it. And I'm like, I can't question because no
Now
one's
you're thinking about it, you're like, wait a
covered.
minute. Oh,
Have something. The venue for the Poland Pro Show, the changing rooms at the facility were all painted orange. So obviously,
no.
as a female, you're going in there to sort your hair and makeup out. You're orange, my hair's orange, and the walls are fucking orange. It's like,
I
I don't know which way was up.
think it's when you do compete internationally as well, it's something to sort of mention that, you know, like you said right at the start, the cost. When you compete
Yes.
internationally, of course, there's more for the travel, etc. But also, you don't know as well what they're going to charge for the tan, the makeup, the hair, if you have all of that done. I remember they tried to rip us off for the tan in Mexico, and the GB president of the federation was like, it's not £125 each for a tan. You know, back home they pay 60, and we managed to get down to about 85 per person. But they, because they say in the currency, I think some people would just go, well, I'll just pay it, and you don't really know what to do because you're in a different country. It's like,
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But I do think that wasn't a tanning booth that you were in, Sarah.
There's probably an OnlyFans account out there making a killing.
Yeah, Sarah, your art is
Dolls.
everywhere.
Thing is, with OnlyFans though, I hear that there's quite a lot of bodybuilders that do it,
Yeah, I think it's quite
and
common.
yeah, our talks as well about, you know, muscular women. I think that people quite like it, girls. So, you know, be an
Yeah.
option for
I
people.
personally, I couldn't do it.
I love how you're like, no.
No,
Yeah, it is.
it's. I've had a lot of creepy men following me around the gym, happening to use the piece of kit opposite me, not actually using it, just sitting there like staring. And I kind of feel, you know, if you want to do OnlyFans, go and do OnlyFans. But for me personally, it's encouraging the sexualization of women with muscle and making it acceptable to sexualize us. And I personally don't agree with that. It's like I want to be able to go into the gym and not feel like an object for somebody to fantasize about. And I feel like these accounts, I mean, whether they're there or not, we're probably still going to be subject to it. But I feel like it brings a level of acceptability, and almost to some people makes out that that is our only purpose, is to put on muscle and get our asses out on Instagram, on OnlyFans. I mean, I don't think badly of anyone that is doing it. I just personally wouldn't do it for those reasons.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't want to be known as Sarah Bradley's got a fanny out on Pornhub or anything like that. So, no, some people do like take those videos and put them over onto Pornhub because I've seen it before. Not that I went actively looking for it, but it's but you know, I mean, like, I don't want to be known as that person. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a level of professionalism that I'm very proud of. And not saying that people who do OnlyFans aren't professional because it's their profession, but I just, yeah, like you, right? I just don't really want to be perceived as that.
I
Do
find
you
that
get a lot of messages about doing sort of muscle worship videography as well, Sarah?
Yeah, all the time. All the time.
I had a shoot booked for, I think it was just before the O, and I booked it when I was, this person messaged me and I was like, yeah, no, that'd be cool. We'll sort out the details once a bit closer to the time. And I think it was the week before I flew out, they double checked and were like, are you still up for doing the shoot? And it suddenly occurred to me, I was like, can I just clarify what sort of content you're looking for? Because if it's flexing, I'm not doing it. They're like, yeah. It's like, you can film me posing, you can film me training, but I will not be doing, I don't do flexing videos either for the same reason. And they were like, yeah, no, that's what we're looking for. Sorry. So I missed out on 500 quid for that.
Yeah, I did something similar to that, but I was like, if you want me to flex, no. And then he just filmed a gym session because I was like, I'm not directly flexing for you, but like you said, like I will pose and stuff.
The Fit Visuals dude that's no longer, it's not Fit Visuals, it's somebody.
That's him, yeah. And he's lovely because I was like, I'm not going to do that, but you can
I've
film
done
me
two
training.
shoots with him now. One between Toronto and Empro, and he was, yeah, nothing but respectful. And then he came up to the gym back in February and we did another shoot. And again, nothing but respectful.
I think you just need to, when things like that happen, you just need to like lay out the law and be like, I'm not going to just be like flexing for you for an hour. Film me training, I'll do some posing, and then you can just put that online.
Yeah. Do
Not
they
really.
normally do the shoot for free, these type, like when they message you and ask for you to do, or like as in you don't have to pay them, they either pay you or it's free?
They pay you normally, yeah. And the money's like really decent, but you gotta like weigh it up. It's like, do I really want to be flexing for weird people? Probably not. So you can just film me training.
I mean, the photos I got from the first shoot that I did with him and the videos from the second, it's all really, really good stuff. Like the way he
Yeah,
films it
absolutely.
is really cool.
Yeah.
So I was really pleased with it. But yeah, it was, he paid me for that hour and we just, it was like, yeah, we're not doing any muscle flexing. He was like, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it could be a revenue stream. But anyone listening, let's just make sure we get the contract signed and be careful
Yeah.
with what you're entering into.
Important to check and make your boundaries and what you are happy and not happy doing clear, because there's nothing like, we did it before the shoot started so that there wasn't any misexpectation, and
Yeah.
also there was then no pressure during the shoot for them to go, oh, can you just do this?
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, if you think, especially the shoot I did between Toronto and Empro, I was so depleted from prep. You're not thinking properly, and you
Yeah.
could potentially succumb to some pressure that you wouldn't normally. So it is important to clarify these things if you do have anyone approach you for a shoot and you do have things that you are comfortable doing. Just
Yeah.
make sure you have that conversation so that the line's sort of drawn, and then
Yeah.
there's no unexpected pressure that you have to try and manage.
Plus, as well, I think when you're like, oh, £500 an hour, fuck yeah. When, like, again, you're not really thinking about, am I really wanting to do this kind of thing? Because you're so like low on money at that point, you're like, actually, I could really do without £500.
Nearly a bikini. Let's
Yeah. Yeah, in it, yeah.
she actually paid for our Airbnb in Spain.
Yeah, nice. Love it.
Well, for sure. Now, we've only just scratched the surface, really, girls, today, which is very cool because we were going to have Emily on, who's going to come on for either our first or second round table as a guest. But as you said, Marna, like doing a bit of an intro into the sort of things we're gonna touch on. But we haven't really spoke about much PDs, coaching, like a lot of things that we can get stuck into, federations, criteria, all these different things that I want the listeners to know that, you know, this is our mission by starting these round tables. And Marna, I want you to sign out with how you described what our mission is as a trio, what you said right at the
God,
start
no pressure.
about the male podcast and the things that go on.
Yes. So there are a lot of male podcasts out there that talk a lot about the intricacies of bodybuilding, but I don't feel, and we don't feel, there's as many when it comes to the more heavily muscled women's categories. And it's just about being able to have these conversations, like trying not to shit yourself in between. In between first call outs and individual presentations. It's conversations that aren't being had with stuff that's happening, and just, you know, being able to allow people to realize that it's not just them and these things do occur and they're normal. And we want to be able to talk about it.
Well, thank you, girls. And like I mentioned, Emily's going to come on for one. We also have an IFBB pro who's a bikini athlete as well coming on from the States soon. So we've got things lined up. Now, I hope everyone's enjoyed this first sort of introduction into what we're going to be doing as the trio. And of course, if people want to follow you on Instagram or reach out, then I'll put your links in the bio. So thank you, girls. As
You.
always, an absolute pleasure.
Always, always. Excited to see what we can do.
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah,
Yeah,
for sure.
so far. So we keep the dream rolling, girls, to inspire, empower, and educate our community. I will speak to you soon.
laters.
Bye.
Bye. Hey.